Lecture 10, Early Union Triumphs in the West.
We return to the military front with this lecture, training our lens on events west of the Appalachian Mountains in 1861 and 1862. We'll look at the shakeup in the Union High Command in the autumn of 1861 that saw Winfield Scott step aside and George B. McClellan take his place. We'll then examine four more topics. We'll start with Union commanders and strategy in the West in 1861 and early 1862, move to Confederate leadership and strategy in the West during that same period, then look at the military advantages and disadvantages of each side in the West, and finish by looking at the opening Northern offensive in the Kentucky-Tennessee theater, an offensive that brought Union success at Fort Henry and Fort Donelson. The Battle of First Manassas, or Bull Run, had captured the imagination of citizens north and south, as we've seen. As the first great battle of the war, it had been one that garnered many, many headlines. And most people, in both nations, I think, still look to the area between the two national capitals as the cockpit of the war. That's where the war would be decided, most people thought. But many professional soldiers looked instead to the west, to that great area between the Appalachian Mountains and the Mississippi River, as the most decisive arena of the war. There, the South had much more territory to cover. There, the North had excellent avenues of advance, and many generals, and Jefferson Davis, and very quickly, Abraham Lincoln, all agreed that the decisive campaigns most likely would be waged. Let's begin by looking at the shuffling of the Union High Command in 1861 and the command structure of the North in the West. General-in-Chief Winfield Scott, who had done so much in the way of early planning from the North, stepped aside in November 1861. He had been troubled with health problems, but he'd also been troubled by the attitude of George B. McClellan, a bright young major general who criticized Scott, thought he knew better than Scott, and I think in the end helped to push Scott off the center stage. Scott left, a man in his mid-70s. He was replaced as general-in-chief by George B. McClellan, a 34-year-old officer of enormous ambition and talent, but also a man with enormous flaws, as we'll see. McClellan would not only be general-in-chief of all the Union armies, he would also take field command as the commander of the biggest army in the Eastern Theater, the Army of the Potomac. In the West, two men were given important commands. Henry Wager Halleck controlled the area from the Cumberland River west, including Missouri. Halleck was 46 years old. He'd been a brilliant student at West Point, absolutely brilliant, and before the war had written a number of books on military topics, on law, and on engineering. He'd been a professor at West Point, and he had turned down a full professorship at Harvard. He resigned from the Army in the mid-1850s, went into business, and did very well. He was an able man who did well at everything he tried before the Civil War. He, in fact, amassed a fortune as a businessman. He was not an imposing individual. He didn't look like a soldier. He had a pot belly. He was balding. He had an unsettling habit of staring at people without blinking. He'd sort of drop his head and just look at the person who was talking to him without blinking. As one witness said, he looked at me with eyes wide open, staring, dull, fishy. There's a great photograph of Halleck with his hands folded in front of him with his head just like that. He's looking at the camera just the way that people described him in person. Great things were expected of Henry W. Halleck. His nickname before the war had been, quite appropriately, Old Brains. People thought that in Halleck they had a winner in the West. The other major commander in the West was named Don Carlos Buell. He commanded from the Cumberland River east, including most of Kentucky, and would have responsibility for eastern Tennessee as well. Much of that area was quite Unionist in sentiment.